I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome. So great to have you back with us today.
Love it. Glad to be back.
So Roger, I think we could start out talking about the urgent iPhone software update that we learned about this week, because Apple has released a critical software patch, as you know, to fix that security vulnerability that researchers said could allow hackers to directly infect iPhones and other Apple devices without user action. But I think to tee that conversation up, I have a quick 30-second clip for us from CBS News titled "Apple Issues Urgent iPhone Software Update" to play, and then we can dive in together.
Okay.
In Tech Talk tonight, iPhone users beware. Apple has issued an urgent iPhone software update to address critical spyware vulnerability. Update plugs a hole in the iMessage software that has allowed hackers to infiltrate a user's phone without the user clicking on any links. That, according to Citizen Lab.
Yeah, the fix was released today. Independent researchers say the vulnerability has been exploited by notorious surveillance software to spy on a Saudi activist. It's been in use since February.
So, I mean, what do you know about this, Roger? And it sounds like Apple has remedied the situation, but it's very captivating what they just shared with us.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a massive flaw, what they call a zero click, where the attacker could send you a message that you don't even get warned about, and that message would contain a file attachment or embedded code that would kick off this zero-day exploit and allow them to then implant spying software on your phone. So literally, you do nothing wrong. You're fully patched. You didn't click on anything. You didn't do anything. It's all this silent zero-click infection. It's very notable for a couple of things. One is this is not the first time it's happened by far. This is at least just what I know about the seventh time.
Oh wow!
Mostly directed at the iPhone, mostly directed at that particular application. Although also Google's WhatsApp has been targeted before. The group involved that did this is called the NSO group out of Israel. They're probably among the best, certainly the most well-known. They're so well-known, they don't want to be well-known. But if most people don't know, there have been for decades this nation-state competition for 0 days. So it used to be that when a 0 day, so that's an unpatched vulnerability, came out, that you would have people release it for free, or maybe people would try to hack with it, and you'd have people that did what's called responsible disclosure to the vendor, which is they report the bug to the vendor and they give the vendor a month or two to try to respond or whatever. That's the way it should be, this responsible disclosure. Then you have these hackers, and let me say, some of them many times good hackers, people like Charlie Miller. He's the guy that's famous for being part of the team that hacked cars, right? Took control of cars. He's a great guy. He's like, hey, I've discovered all these 0 days and I just want to get paid. Like, this is my, and he used to work for the NSA, knew how to find bugs. Great guy. He's like, I just want to be paid. I don't want to do anything bad. I'm not going to release it to anybody bad, but I would like to be paid for my efforts. And Microsoft and Google and Apple wouldn't pay him. And he was very frustrated. So he literally, I think he started this thing, no more free bugs or something. But during that time, there was always this time where if you found a really good 0 day, so back in the day, it meant for Microsoft Windows, that kind of morphed into Apple now on the iPhone, that if you had this really good attack, that you could just send the exploit and take over somebody's machine. Those are really rare. They're very valuable. Well, now there exist dozens of intermediate services that will sell these bugs. So the attackers are the people that find these types of bugs, these valuable 0 days, will go to these brokers, and there's dozens of them around the world. They've been around for decades, some of them for decades, and they'll get the bug discoverer hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars. So this Apple iPhone bug was either discovered by the NSO group, by their developers. They're literally famous for discovering Apple iPhone 0 days. Or someone found the bug and then sold it to them that they reused. And then The NSO group said, you know, when they were kind of discovered, and again, they got overly popular, which is, you know, known to the public. That is not a good thing for most of those type of guys.
Right.
They said, listen, we only allow, you know, nation states that are going after terrorist threats and law enforcement to use these things in legitimate ways. Well, research by different journalists found out that they've been able to discover who these different exploits have been done against. And it turns out the large majority of them are not terrorists. The large majority of them are journalists and dissidents. So, and probably the most famous incident, if it's been confirmed, was against Jeff Bezos. So Jeff Bezos owns a newspaper in the United States. I forget which one he owns, but he had published a story about the Saudi Arabian government murdering a Saudi Arabian journalist that was actually functioning as a U.S. journalist, but he'd gone to Turkey to get a marriage license so he could marry his sweetheart, and he was murdered there. And so the Jeff Bezos newspapers published these accounts and the evidence of the murder taking place in the Turkish embassy. It was a big deal around the world. Well, the Saudi Arabian government, the crown prince that's involved in the murder, sent Jeff Bezos a message. I think it was on WhatsApp at the time, and it took over his phone, and they stole his private messages and private pictures to his girlfriend who he was having an affair with at the time. So, and they said, they're like, hey, you're going to out us. We're going to embarrass you. So today, literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of nation states, law enforcement agencies, anybody can, you know, that's been vetted by these people, but it's hundreds and hundreds of people and organizations can buy these bugs, and they pay not only for the service, but then they pay per bug that they're using and then per instance of the bug. But again, someone revealed it recently and just found it's hundreds of people, mostly against journalists and dissidents, not against terrorists, right? Mm. So, you know, they're just accepting the money. There's very little validation being done. So the zero-day click zero attack against the iChat app, not unique at all. This happened against iPhones. Out of like the seven times I know about it happening publicly, like six of them been against iPhone. That's because the people that they're targeting are more likely to use iPhones than Androids. I don't think it is that the iPhone is any more susceptible or not. But what's interesting in this one, I think, is that it got known publicly, and Apple also said we're going to close it, and it became known. A lot of these bugs are not known. You have to assume, my basic assumption is that anytime different various nation states have hundreds to thousands of undisclosed zero days. I once talked to a friend of mine that worked for the United States nation state, and he said that they knew of hundreds to thousands of exploitable bugs in most software programs. Oh, not wow. That they had hundreds or thousands together, but they had hundreds to thousands in each program.
Wow.
And he was among the best hackers I've ever met. He could break into anything. He coded his own stuff. And I said, he couldn't answer me a lot. He was working for what we would just assume is a normal employment agency, but they work in DC and through that employment agency, they then get, they work for the United States government. And I said to him, I said, oh, are you hired to hack and break into software and stuff? He goes, no. I said, well, can you describe to me what you do? He goes, well, I can just tell you there's 5,000 people like me. And he said, and this is 10 years ago.
Okay.
He said, and what I'm in charge of is what's called a software fuzzer. That's a machine that looks for software vulnerabilities. He goes, they're actually finding thousands and thousands of bugs automated. They do it in such a way that it's much faster than a human could do it. He said, my job is to update the artificial intelligence to make it recognize when it's found an exploitable bug that can be used to do hacking versus one that just crashes a system or something like that. He said, my job is to make the fuzzer smarter at finding exploitable bugs. This was 10 years ago. So today, as a matter of fact, there's a great book called the big black book of electronic surveillance that I read, but it lists like the top 100 most popular, nation states and surveillance tools and stuff in there. And it covers all the major purveyors. But I think if you read that, it will kind of scare you, right? just how prolific it is, just how common it is. I'm trying to think, there's another book I recently read. Oh gosh, but it was about zero day threat. Oh, this is how they tell me the world ends or something like that by Nicole Perth. I forget the exact title, but
yeah, I'm actually speaking with her today about that book.
Oh, wow. So she's, you tell her Roger Grimes said she's I'm impressed with her writing and her research.
Yeah.
And what if she knows that she doesn't need me to give her affirmation. You know, she's on all kinds of major news shows and stuff. I actually once got to speak in her place because she got too popular to take the smaller gigs.
Oh, wow.
And so she had pulled out and they got me in her place. But I'm a big fan. But reading her book, I probably knew 80% of what was in the book, but she still revealed details and things about the zero-day market.
Yeah.
That she was really focusing on the ethics of 0 days. Mm. Like, and so our nation states are paying, the United States buys the most 0 days on the market and pays the most money. We routinely pay hundreds of thousands to easily $1 million. But now you have nation states like Saudi Arabia and Iran and other countries that are like, we're going to pay $2 million. If the Americans are paying $1 million, we'll pay $2 million or $3 million. So you have a lot of these kind of dangerous 0 days that are maybe going out to places that aren't using, not that are using them more indiscriminately than we would. And but we're the ones to blame. We're kind of the ones that made the market, and we're the ones that drove up the prices. And we just thought, hey, if we pay $1 million, that'd keep the bad guys out of it. Well, it just turns out that we're being, outbid. Our success in the market we created released an animal. And so her book is about the ethics of it. And it, and let me say, it's a really tough thing, right? You've got nation states that are trying to protect itself and their citizens.
Sure.
And certainly, I don't care what nation state you're in. Your nation state's done both good and bad things that you as a citizen would or would not agree with. It's just,
right.
just the nature of the beast. And it just the whole thing of this taking over your phone and stuff like that. I mean, just think about it. Every single iPhone user had this vulnerability where anybody that subscribed to this NSO group service could just go read everything that's on yourself. You have to assume that can happen at any time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And it's crazy to think about. And I think that this particular instance, I agree with you. It's very, it seems like it's almost, and I don't know if this is fair to say, but more the most transparent we've learned of to date with something like this, especially that widely impacts people, and Apple giving credit to the researchers at Citizen Lab in Toronto and saying that they've tried to remedy it. But is it safe to assume, Roger, anytime we get a software update on a device that basically something like this is happening and they're trying to patch it? Is that pretty standard?
I don't know. So there was kind of this silent agreement between vendors that they wouldn't maybe patch it so quickly.
Okay.
In the past. So like Kerspowski would find, they're a Russian, or Ukrainian-based antivirus. They would find and announce and release information on 0 days from the United States and our allies. And it would seem that our antivirus vendors were slow on adding that signature to their detection databases.
Okay.
And it certainly wasn't announced. And it seemed to be a slow response, kind of like our side was like, well, we're the good guys and we're not trying to shut down our nation state.
Yeah.
There seems to be a more concerted effort to try to fix the bugs. Interesting. In the United States, supposedly, and this is kind of funny, and is this in Nicole's book? Yeah, it actually is in Nicole's book. Anytime supposedly our intelligence agencies find a 0 day, they're supposed to take the 0 day to this council, and the members of which we don't know who's on it, although she's discovered some of the people that are on NSA and the Department of Defense and DOD and other people. And supposedly this committee is supposed to meet and go, okay, we've got this 0 day and we're going to vote on whether or not we keep the 0 day secret so we can use it offensively, or we're going to tell the whole world about it, the vendors about it, so it can be patched. And supposedly they very rarely, this is what they say, very rarely keep a 0 day secret. That most of the time, unless it's in the end, the wording's very nebulous, very wide. They're like, unless it's needed in the, the case of national security, we're going to release it. And what's funny is that they only disclose a handful of bugs a year.
Okay.
And we're talking about, they know of hundreds to thousands. And like a couple of months ago, there is the big Microsoft 0 days that were being exploited. First was being exploited by Russian ATP, and then it got it picked up by a bunch of ransomware people and, took off and infected hundreds of thousands of people around the world. Well, right after those bugs were disclosed and patched, within days or a week or two, our NSA released two other bugs on Exchange and said, oh, you need to go fix these. You're like, was this just like they just happened to be on it, or did they have them already cataloged? Probably a good chance they were sitting on them. So it's kind of funny. We have this, hey, if you discover a zero day, you know, they're going to vote on it and we're going to close most of them. As far, I think Nicole would tell you, you could ask her this maybe when you interview her, but it's got to be bogus that they disclose the vast majority of them. It seems highly unlikely. And then you go to like China. China recently passed a law that any of their researchers finding a zero day must disclose the bug to the Chinese government and cannot disclose or sell the bug anywhere else under like penalty of death or something.
Oh, wow.
So at least in the United States, you can still sell your bug and you have some freedom. But there's no question about the Chinese government is not going to disclose the bug.
Right.
They're going to keep it and use it for their purposes. So, you know, I'm in no false assumption that my government is all good and altruistic, although I feel that my government has better ethics and better decision making capabilities than a lot of other governments. So I do. And again, maybe it's because I'm American, but I'm a proud American. But I think that we have a lot of competent people trying to make the right decisions. They don't always in every case, but I feel confident that we are. The scary part is the monster's been unleashed, and any government, whether they have good ethics, bad ethics, whatever their motivations are, can do whatever they want with these zero days.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way of putting it. And as far as this particular instance goes, from what I have read on various news sites and from various reporters, it sounds like for the everyday person, you know, just update your phone. You don't have a whole lot to worry about. But to your point, because we are all walking around with this technology that is vulnerable to zero day and zero click attacks like this, you just kind of have to accept in a way that this happens and can happen to you.
Yeah. You know, some of my friends have older friends. Have those basic flip phones with no apps, and that could protect you. But I guarantee you that even there's zero days even on those phones. Or you have people that they'll buy those special secret phones. It's like a modified iPhone or modified Android that has some. Let me tell you, it's all a farce. you need to assume anything that you have digitally not only could be in somebody else's hands, but is likely to be or would be if they simply went looking for it. You know, like I wonder how many people, every once in a while I have people go, Roger, how secure do you think Tor is? I'm like, whatever you're thinking of doing ethically or illegally wrong, don't do it.
Yeah.
Like how many criminals using Tor have to be arrested where you don't figure out that something's up?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like literally Tor made by the government. They own, you know, my guess is, and I'm just speculating, they must own the majority of Tor exit nodes or nodes. Somehow a lot of people that think they're anonymous, when finally law enforcement goes looking for them, they arrest them.
Right.
You know, it's they seem to be pretty good at it. So my wife, right, not a computer security geek. She's been around me for 30 years, but she's like, yep, don't put anything on the internet. Don't take a picture that you don't want everybody knowing. And I think that is a... Don't make a message. Don't do a heated email. Don't do a nude picture. Just assume that whatever you take with your digital device could be known to everyone, right? Too bad too many people, like every time you see like a new nude celebrity leaked photo, you're like, do you not get it?
Yeah,
have you not watched like 100 like you must intentionally want your nude photos out there.
Right. I completely agree with that. And whenever someone is surprised that that's a story, I'm like, what? Well, it's going to be a story for any, like it's possible. Yeah, exactly. And I think that this type of behavior we're talking about is a nice segue into our next topic. I know that you read this. I read it this past weekend. I think it was in Friday I think it was Friday's Wall Street Journal. There was a special journal report actually all about cybersecurity, which was awesome. But this particular article by Heidi Mitchell, which is titled How Hackers Use Our Brains Against Us, Cyber Criminals Take Advantage of the Unconscious Processes That We All Use to Make Decision-Making More Efficient, Blame It on Our Lizard Brains. This really resonated with me. I'm a psych and behavioral psych nerd. I went to school for psych. And I think that anyone who's in cyber is inherently interested in human behavior, especially when we talk about social engineering. So I figured you were the perfect person to talk about this article with. And so Before we get into all the different types of biases that Heidi laid out, I'd love to hear a quick take from you, Roger.
Yeah, so let me say, I love that article. I think it's one of the better ones that's been out there. And it's something that myself and Noble Four and other friends and PhDs I know are trying to research. So, I got to say, it's some exciting stuff. One of the things, not only that looks into, and again, has a lot of really great information, but how do people get phished? I kind of break it down into, it's an email or a message or a call that arrives unexpectedly. It's asking you to do something that the person or company has never asked you to do before, such as go out and buy gift cards to pay your energy, your electricity bill. The requested action could be harmful to you or your organization. You know, run a file, provide your email credentials, get a gift card, change bank wiring instructions. Then most of them are trying to create a sense of urgency called a stressor event that gets to the mammalian brain. Oh, I got to move. I got to do this or I'm going to lose this. And then contains a link or a file attachment if it's like an email or a message. But, you know, so that article looks at what are the human behaviors to these sort of stressor events and things that make us more susceptible to phishing. But I've got to say, one of the ones that we've been looking at, and some of the PhD friends of mine, Matt Clapham, he's been looking at for a long time, what makes some people more susceptible to phishing than others. So what I love about his is, so the article you referenced talks about what makes us all susceptible to phishing.
Right.
What he is looking at and shared with me, phenomenal research, is what makes certain people, you always have certain people in every organization that are very unlikely to be phished. They never click on a fish.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other people that seem to click on every fish, right? And you're like, does this not look familiar? Did we not talk about this? So we call them the frequent clickers.
Okay.
Well, like one of the things he found, and again, I'm always talking so much, but what I love this thing is he found that the difference, one of the biggest differences between people that never clicked and the people that were more likely to click was literally how good their memory was. So he had people, when he was in, he did a study and he would tell people to remember to make up a number and to remember the number between this week or two and between two calls. So he said, make up a number, but you need to tell me this number when I call back in 2 weeks. And then when he called back and when he talked to him in a couple of weeks, the people that were the frequent clickers, all of them to a person couldn't remember the number they made up. And the people that never got phished, all of them remembered their number.
Interesting.
And so he said, potentially the difference between an unfishable or less fishable and a very fishable person could be a memory deficit. And what does that mean? How does that change the way that we train if the real problem behind the scenes is this true inability to have overall a bad memory? It turns out it's not this susceptibility or this innocence. Maybe it could boil down to, at least in this one study, just to how well people can memorize them. Could you test somebody and put five cards, tell them to memorize the cards, turn them over, and then ask them to tell you what cards it was? And if someone did really bad on the test, would you now know that person has to have tighter computer security control because they failed a memory test? Right. Maybe that's where it leads to in the future.
That's really fascinating. So that sounds like really fascinating work being done. You're right. This article was kind of democratized, you know, attacks for everyone. Like it's equal opportunity. But there are certainly certain folks who are predisposed. And I think that's really fascinating that you're trying to unpack that to help those folks. Right. I mean, I guess that's the thing that I found interesting with this article about it being so equal opportunity, because I think it's very easy for folks to know someone who has been phished or subject to business email compromise or a romance scam and judge them. But the reality is they might not have that great memory or whatever contributes to being someone who can't be phished. Perhaps that opportunity, for lack of a better term, just hasn't come knocking yet on their door. So I think that this helps. For me, this really helped, especially for, you know, having conversations with friends or loved ones who don't really understand what it is I do, what it is we all do, you know, like try explaining to them, well, this is why this is such a problem. Because I think on the outside, it's really easy to reduce it. That's just my take.
Yeah, let me say, I put this in a, I teach about fighting social engineering and phishing all the time. And one of the things I say is that everybody can be phished and everybody can be tricked. And it has nothing to do with intelligence.
Yeah.
It literally, I've been successfully phished at least a couple of times through simulated phishing attacks. And, you know, it's funny. I joined Noble Ford. It's been 3 or 4 years ago. And I was mostly hired, largely hired, partially hired, because I wrote a book called Data-Driven Computer Defense. And it just talks about using data to figure out how to defend yourself. And if you look at the data, most companies are not doing enough to fight phishing. That's really what it kind of boils down to. Mm-hmm. And it's why Stu, the CEO, hired me. Well, my first or second day I was there, and I'm thinking to myself, I know they're going to fish me. They tell you, we're going to fish you all the time. We get simulated fish several times a week. And I thought, I'm not going to fall. I've never been fished, as far as I know, that I'm not going to get. The first day, I fell.
Oh.
And it was an email purporting to be from Stu. And it said, oh, here's this new survey that shows that it's actually unpatched software that's the number one problem. Well, I knew from looking at data for 20 years that unpatched software was the number two problem, not the number one problem. And so it said, if you want to look at the data behind this survey, click here. Boom. That was it. Like, I was like, I can't believe the survey is claiming that patching's number one. That's so stupid. And I clicked. Like, you know, I was appropriately motivated. And then let me say, during COVID, twice I got COVID-related simulated phishing emails. And one said, they both said basically, oh, sign up to take your COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
And I knew that the vaccines were not out yet. They weren't approved. And I went, who the heck thinks we can get vaccinated yet? And I clicked on them. And boom, done again, you know, and I'm like, and I did that twice, I believe. And you ready for the wild part? I didn't think of myself as a phishable person to the second one. Like the first one, I went, okay, a mistake. They really targeted me with this data-driven, and they actually hadn't targeted me. It was a journal phishing email they sent to everybody.
Oh,
but
interesting.
I thought, just a mistake. They got me. It wasn't to the second one where I told myself, okay, I'm not superhuman. I'm phishable. And then it happened a third time. I literally got depressed. You can talk to my wife. I was depressed because like, I can't believe I work for this anti-phishing company and I've been phished again. And then we actually have counselors at work.
Oh, wow.
That come to you when you've been phished multiple times. And he was like, Roger, you know, anything weird going on that you've been phished twice lately? And I was like, I'm moving. You know, I'm busy. I'm in this move and this or that. But then he said, what's motivating you to click on this? And the commonality was really the scenes were COVID related and kind of politically related, because I'm kind of a political beast.
Okay.
And that's what was, I was getting angry inside of me, because I knew that, you know, there are people putting disinformation out for the vaccines, and this was disinformation, and they found out how, and he finally went, okay, anytime you feel yourself being motivated, you know, angry, that's a sign that you need to slow down. And you know, what's funny, so far, knock on wood, it's worked.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden I just realized that the stressor event for me was this political thing. They've tried to fish me 100 times since using politically type driven messages. And it's not working, because I've learned as soon as I go, what's this? I stop.
Mm.
So, you know, so the article you reference talks about that again. What are these, you know, stressor events? What are the behaviors that get people to, you know, to click on things? And this is what I'll tell the people again. Anybody can be phished. I've had people tell me, you can't fish me. I have successfully fished every one of them. and let me say, and there's some obscure ones. Like one of my favorites, I'm revealing this now, is that I will send them an email that is asking for permission to survey the front yard for the right-of-way for the new highway that we're going to expand the street in their neighborhood to handle the new flow of traffic due to the new highway exit that's coming nearby. And I say, and click here if you want to find more information about this project. It gets them every time, because people are pissed. They don't want to give up part of the yard to concrete and increase traffic. If you appropriately motivate people, they will click.
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially I think it's very, I mean, thank you for sharing how your trigger is your anger for like, you know, that's what your trigger is, that emotion. And that is, yeah, exactly. It's what the article covers off on, which is really great. But I think it's I think it's even better to hear it from you and how you kind of, like, I'd be curious. I wonder what mine is. I don't know, you know, but I'm sure I have one.
You know, another common one I hear about is so older people will be called and the fisher claims they have the grandson arrested and you need to, and the grandson is too scared to call the parent.
Yep.
And so you have the grandparent, literally, they'll send tens of thousands of dollars. And, you know, sometimes they'll claim that they heard the son's voice or something. Or another one that hit, I live in Tampa, Florida now. And what hit this week was a whole bunch of people got scammed with a fake Duke Energy call. So someone called claiming to be in the local electrical company and you're behind on your bill. And they then said, go to your local store and get a bunch of gift cards to pay us or your electricity is going to be turned off.
Oh.
And I'm like, who in the world would believe that the local energy company is going to ask you to go get gift cards to avoid having your electricity turned off? Turned out hundreds of people.
Oh, wow.
And not only this, but what I loved about the vishing attacker, if you have to admire something, they said, if the person that's selling you the gift card or the money card ask you if you're doing this to pay a bill, tell them no, because to pay a bill, it costs $16.70 a gift card. But if you tell them no, it's only $1.10.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so that's like, wow. So you have the retailers of these gift cards when they're seeing people buy multiple cards for these large amounts, like, hey, if you're paying a bill, it's going to be a bogus. It's probably going to be bogus. They're teaching them how to get around that, you know, that prevention. I'm like, you know, kudos to the attacker.
Yeah, they are thinking about everything. Wow. Oh, that breaks my heart. That's so just, you know, sad to hear that is happening to folks. But it is, it's happening and they're evolving. Cause that's the first time I've heard of that. Like, well, make sure that the bill thing, I've never heard of that before. So it's going to keep getting worse, I think, with that.
And you read the stories. One of the parts was, I was like, who could fall for this? It was law enforcement officers' wives, a professor.
Yeah.
But what was a commonality in a lot of them is they'd actually been late on their bill by a couple of days. And
okay.
So this person calling around to thousands of people was able to hit the people that had actually been late in many cases. But even people that weren't late, they're like, I don't know what's on. I'm going to pay it. I was in the hospital and my wife's going through cancer. And I just figured I'd pay it the way that they said so that we could just, and I would resolve it at a later date. You know, it was a whole bunch of different explanations, but it was a whole lot of, and they're not dumb people.
No, no. But to your point, like you said, like I'm moving or, you know, people have people in the hospital. It's just, we all have life going on and the bad actors are capitalizing on that. That's they're savvy to that. So that's hard to hear. Oh, well, Roger, another great conversation with you as always. I'm just always enjoying our time together. And I just thank you so much for coming on and sharing what you know and your expertise. And today sharing a little, you know, some honesty about fishing.
That I'm fishable.
You're fishable. World,
I work for the world's best anti-fishing company and they have fished me successfully 3 times.
Well, that's why they're good at what they do. So,
and actually, you know, the best part about it is I really feel that being fished has made me a better, you know, being better at fighting the real fishes. I don't think I've ever been successfully fished, but now knowing that I'm fishable has made me slow down and made me be even more skeptical. So that's one of the benefits of being simulated fished is that I know I'm fishable and it's changed my mindset, hopefully for the better.
Yeah. And I think that's a great sentiment for anyone listening or and companies to capitalize on that it is helpful for folks to know that so that they are on the lookout and on guard.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, Roger. Thank you so much. And looking forward to next week.
See you then.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com, and you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.